Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Tuesday, June 2nd. A very good morning to you and welcome to this edition of Africa Link. Coming up, Burundi's ruling coalition government welcomes recommendations to postpone the elections.
On Tuesday, protests will resume, but good and non-violent protests. We call on them to go to demonstrations hands up without stoning police agents.
As corruption scandals awash the football world governing body FIFA, South Africa denies the $10 million it paid to the organization wasn't bribed to host the 2010 World Cup.
All funding by South African government was transferred via the National Treasury to the National Department of Sports and Recreation, South Africa. No such amount was paid by the Department of Sport and Recreation and the government of South Africa to any individual.
And in Making a Different segment, we meet a young Ghanaian who is influencing positive changes in his environment to prevent climate change. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo, in Bonn, Germany.
Top story.
The governing party of President Pierre Nkurunziza in Burundi has said it welcomed recommendations from leaders of the East African regional body to postpone the elections by a period of 6 weeks. President Nkurunziza is bidding for a third term, but opposition parties and civil rights activists claim this violates the constitution. This sparked weeks of deadly protest and a regional refugee crisis. Following the unending protest in the capital Bujumbura, East African leaders met on Sunday in Tanzania to find a solution to the political deadlock. Apollonia Niyurora reports from Bujumbura.
The ruling CNDD-FDD party has commended regional leaders for recommending the postponement of elections for 1.5 months. Daniel Gelaz Ndabirabe is the spokesman of the ruling party.
The CNDD-FDD has a positive appreciation about this communication from the emergent summit of heads of state of the East African community. Nonetheless, in the CNDD-FDD, we analyze deeply this decision. During this postponement, members of the summit, led by its chairperson, will consult with all stakeholders in Burundi on the way forward.
Opposition leader Agathon Rwasa also welcomed the recommendation from the Dar es Salaam summit. He, however, raised issues that he said need to be adequately addressed.
If now there is this plea from the East African community leaders that we should postpone this election, there are some questions which are put to the table and which needs to be dealt with properly. What is needed now is ask any stakeholder be responsible in what is to be implemented soon. After all, these issues of security, this issue of disarmament of the youths, this issue of repatriation of those who fled the country with regard to the current situation. I think these issues, along with this issue of the third term, must be dealt with properly.
Civil society organizations also hailed the recommendation. Chairman of the Association for the Protection of Human Rights and Detainees' Rights, Pierre Claver Mbonimpa, said the postponement period will provide room for President Nkurunziza to drop his third-term bid.
As far as we are concerned, we also welcome the recommendation because the beginning is always difficult. We assume that it is a beginning. Deciding to postpone elections for 1.5 months is a very good recommendation. It is an opportunity given to the president so that he takes his time to see what is suitable for Burundi. As many Burundians say, Nkurunziza's third term violates the law.
Activist Mbonima said protests will resume on Tuesday to force the Burundian president to avoid his plans for a third term.
On Tuesday, protests will resume, but good and non-violent protests. We call on them to go to demonstrations hands up without stoning police agents. We call on police agents to accompany them to their destination, and we agreed with the Home Affairs Minister. And when they reach their destination, they will show their concerns and will go back home. And they will continue protest the following days until the president says, I give up the third term.
Initially, Burundi had planned to hold the legislative and communal elections on May the 26th, but the elections were postponed for June the 5th. The protest against Nkurunziza's third term bid have claimed more than 30 lives and sparked a regional refugee crisis.
Apollinaire Nyirora in Bujumbura. This new six-week period is set for all sides in Burundi to hold talks and find a solution to the deadlock. But as Apollinaire mentioned in that report, civil rights activists and opposition parties do not seem to be ready to back down. So was the decision to postpone the elections the right move? I put that question to Dr. Phil Clark, an expert on Burundi at SOAS, University of London.
This decision to postpone the elections is really only half the necessary response. That there would also need to be a range of other conditions put in place for those elections to have any kind of meaningful impact. Firstly, there would have to be much greater freedom of expression and freedom of the media in Burundi. There's no point holding elections when there's still a media blackout amongst almost all of the domestic media outlets. And that means that most Burundians are denied the kind of information that they would need in order to participate fully in these elections. And also there would need to be the release of a range of opposition leaders and opposition figures who've been arrested over the last few weeks. Without the participation of those individuals, that these elections also are fairly meaningless.
The wishes of the people have not really been considered in this decision, is it?
No, I think the wishes of everyday Burundians have been almost entirely obliterated in these discussions. That you can see from the scale of the protests that are continuing in Bujumbura that people are still angry. That the East African community leaders now seem to have resigned themselves to the fact that Nkurunziza will try to run again at these elections. And that's the kind of thing that will only make the protesters angrier.
The platform at which both parties are looking for solution is at with the East African leaders, but most of these leaders themselves have also been in power for quite a long time. Isn't that a bit ironic?
This is one of the main reasons why the East African community has been, I would say, fairly useless. Many of these exact same leaders face the same sets of issues that Nkurunziza is also facing. If you look especially at Uganda, President Museveni has been in power since 1986. He's also changed the constitution to continue running at elections. Rwanda faces a very difficult issue at the moment about whether President Kagame should be able to run for a third term in 2017. And so these presidents are very reluctant to send too strong a message to Nkurunziza to tell him not to run. The other thing that should be recognized is that many of the leaders in the region have often been quite friendly with Nkurunziza, that they've tended to have quite functional political relations with him. And so they're also reluctant to get rid of him and to have to deal with a political opposition that is much less predictable.
Dr. Phil Clark of SOAS, University of London.
News, analysis and feature reports. All that here on Africa Link.
The growing corruption scandal against Football World Governing Body FIFA has taken a new twist in South Africa. South Africa's 2010 World Cup Organizing Committee has accepted paying out a $10 million sum to CONCACAF, the Confederation of North, Central America and Caribbean Association of Football. However, the committee has denied that the money was a bribe. An investigation by the United States alleges that South Africa paid the amount to a FIFA official to win the bid as host of the 2010 FIFA World Cup. The FIFA official who collected the amount is one of several officials under investigations in the U.S. charged with corruption offenses. Tuzo Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The current president of the South African Football Association, SAFA, Danny Odan, who was the chief executive officer of the 2010 FIFA World Cup local organizing committee, told a Sunday online publication that SAFA transferred $10 million to the Confederation of North, Central American and Caribbean Association Football, CONCACAF, in 2008. Former FIFA Vice President Jack Warner, who is named in the South African bribery allegation, was the president of the CONCACAF at the time. However, Yodan said this amount was paid as South Africa's contribution towards CONCACAF's Football Development Fund. He defended the association against any wrongdoing, saying That amount was only paid 4 years after South Africa won the bid to host the 2010 tournament. And the South African government has cautioned the media and its citizens to refrain from speculating on the matter and warned those involved in the bidding to stop making comments that will put South Africa in bad light. Sports Minister Mbalula insisted that South Africa's hands remained clean and said there was no contradiction between the government statement and the information revealed by Jordan.
The Department of Sports and Recreation, South Africa, hereby indicates that all funding by South African government was transferred via the National Treasury to the National Department of Sports and Recreation, South Africa, and that no such amount was paid by the Department of Sport and Recreation and the government of South Africa to any individual.
However, the latest revelations have left South Africans even more divided over the alleged scandal. Some have questioned why the amount was deducted from the $100 million paid to SAFA by FIFA to help the country to finance the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Siyabonga Mhambi is one of those calling on the government to immediately institute its own probe to avoid later embarrassment.
Well, I think where there is smoke, there is always fire. But I suppose we'll have to wait until the investigations unfold and there is a conclusion. Because as things stand, it's painting a very bad light on the achievement by the country hosting the World Cup. Spoil what has been done by SAFA and everyone involved, including Mandela.
But some South Africans, like Lesedi Mohamane, believe the Americans are only up to tarnishing her country's image. She wants the FBI to urgently furnish South Africa with all the facts backing its allegations.
People will always have a good image of South Africa, and there will always be politics and scandals about a country just to bring down the image. And there's always ways to bring the image back up. So even if it does damage South Africa, they can always bring it back.
Tuzo Kumalo in Johannesburg compiled that report.
Africa on the move.
Arabica coffee, produced in the Lake Kivu region in the Democratic Republic of Congo, is highly demanded at the international market today. For decades, production of this coffee in the remote part of DRC was unknown to the world due to its long and enduring conflict that ravaged the entire region. Coffee farmers had to sell their produce to local buyers at a cheaper price, while others turned to black markets in neighboring countries. But when an international coffee dealer discovered this market, the result was a new kind of fair trade market propelled by local agricultural cooperatives. This report now by Jack Kahora in Goma for this week's Africa on the Move.
Workers are clearing mucilage. Mucilage is sugar water that comes from coffee which has just been peeled.
At this coffee processing site in Wengehera Kavumu village, 30 kilometers northwest of Bukavu, Supervisor Emmanuel Chibambe Bashiga is in charge of about a dozen team members. He, however, finds the time to describe to me how the production process works.
After we have peeled coffee, we have to keep its beans for 2 days in and out of water, then lay it in the pre-dryer for 2 days and finally on the dryer. Once dried, it is husked and then placed in a machine to check its temperature. If the humidity is at least 11%, then we pack it in the bag.
Emmanuel and his team are processing Arabica coffee. Richard Hyde, working with the British coffee company Twin Trade Limited, discovered this backyard processing plant and anticipated an international market for it.
In the coffee markets of the United States, Europe and Japan, this coffee is wanted.
For decades, this coffee worth very little amount. Regional buyers used to dictate the price, capitalizing on farmers' ignorance of the international coffee market. François Kabidou is a coffee farmer and executive secretary of Sopakdi, an agricultural cooperative which takes care of thousands of small coffee producers in Minova, 50 kilometers west of Goma.
After they have collected and stacked a lot of coffee, buyers used to tell small coffee producers that the price has decreased at the international market. But with Sopakti, the price is only increasing.
Most coffee farmers in Lake Kivu have seen the need to belong to an agricultural cooperative. Nearly four of them are already operational and have modern coffee washing stations. These cooperatives provide technical support to farmers in the maintenance of their plantations and buy their harvest at a good price. Kagaba Masirika, a coffee producer in the village of Bwengehera, Kavumu, welcomes the existence of RAEC, an agricultural cooperative of his village.
My wife, my daughter and I harvest coffee and bring it here to the coffee washing station. We are no longer going far away. We are selling a kilogram of unpeeled coffee for 300 Congolese francs. As soon as we bring our coffee here, we are immediately paid cash. That is the reason why we are happy.
Catholic Relief Service, Oxfam Fair Trade and Twin Trade Limited are acting as intermediaries between the Kivu agricultural cooperatives and international coffee buyers. They raise funds to enable their partners to buy coffee from small producers. With these funds, cooperatives are able to export coffee to the international market.
Jack Kahora in Goma, Eastern DR Congo. In April, Germany officially recognized the massacre committed by Turkey in Armenia as genocide. Yet to this day, Germany refuses to call the murder of tens of thousands of Namibians during its colonial rule there as genocide. Today, a group of German parliamentarians led by Dagmar Freitag of the Social Democratic SPD party is visiting Namibia to meet MPs, civil society representatives and academics. Rights groups and representatives of the victims say the time for Germany to take responsibility is now. This report by Teresa Kreninger has been adapted for Africa Link by Sela Oneko.
The calls for an official recognition of the Namibian genocide have grown even stronger after the German parliament or Bundestag recognized the Armenian genocide in April this year. For Israel Karnatike, a Herero living in Berlin, the visit by German lawmakers to Namibia is a chance for Germany to finally recognize that the slaughter of the Herero, Nama, Damara and San peoples of Namibia was, in fact, a genocide. Konatika is surprised that Germany does not view the Herero genocide in Namibia the same way that it does the Armenian one.
They don't take us seriously. First, because we are Africans, and people from Africa are usually not taken seriously when it comes to such matters. That is why we say it is discriminating and disrespectful to victims of the genocide.
According to the United Nations, the first genocide of the 20th century was committed in 1904 by German troops in what was then known as German Southwest Africa, now modern-day Namibia. At that time, the German general Lothar von Trotha used an uprising by the locals against the colonialists as a pretext to slaughter around 70,000 Hereros. This amounted to about 80% of its population. The troops also wiped out half of the people of the Nama ethnic group. The UN officially recognized the killings as genocide as early as 1948, but Germany has failed to do so to this day. In 2004, Heidemarie Wieczorek-Zeul, Germany's development minister at the time, took first steps to acknowledge Germany's colonial atrocities committed in Namibia. She attended a remembrance service in Namibia's Waterberg and asked for forgiveness through a joint prayer. An official German apology was, however, not part of the package. The German parliament has seen several attempts to demand an apology. Germany's ex-minister, Wieczorek-Zeul, says it is time for Berlin to come to terms with its colonial past.
You cannot just always ask others to recognize their guilt. You also have to admit your own guilt and give things their proper name.
The German government has rejected such claims. Germany also says that it has done its part by continually cooperating and supporting the Namibian government. Besides recognition, compensation should also be up for discussion, says Kauta Nike, who started the initiative No Amnesty for Genocide in Germany.
We still have many descendants of those murdered and displaced who are now living in South Africa, Botswana and Angola. They should be able to return to their homelands and receive compensation for losing their land. just like it happened in Israel, Poland and Lithuania. That should also apply to us.
Theresa Krieninger compiled that report.
Making a difference.
For Making a Difference this week, we meet a young Ghanaian climate change advocate, Gideon Kome. Now, world leaders have been struggling to find a solution to cut down on fossil fuel or greenhouse gas, which researchers say is the cause for global warming. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, is meeting here in Bonn to follow up on the last discussions in Lima, Peru. One major challenge the UN is facing is getting governments to change their policies towards a more friendly environment and also reach local masses. This is where Kome and his local organization come in. This report now by Azak Kaleji in Accra, Ghana.
President Barack Obama.
We hold you to your words.
That failure to respond to the threat of climate change
will betray our children and future generations.
We are at a crossroads.
Several youth are featured in this advocacy video to talk about the dangers of climate change and what role they can play in ending the looming catastrophe.
No to Keystone XL.
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 The brain behind this initiative is 30-year-old Gideon Marcel Kome.
I'm an environmental activist, the founder of the Ghana Youth Environmental Movement, and a climate reality leader. I have personally been trained by former U.S. Vice President Al Gore to educate the public about climate change, the science of climate change, the impact, and possible solutions.
In 2007, Kome nearly died from food poisoning at the University of Ghana due to the poor sanitary condition at the restaurant of the university campus. That experience forced him to form the Ghana Youth Environmental Movement.
My deepest pain actually brought out the desire to fight for environmental sustainability. So after school, I formed the environmental movement as a platform to mobilize young people, to educate them about environment, focusing on sanitation and climate change, and then run campaigns for environmental justice.
The work of Kome and his young movement appears to be chalking some successes. Experts in Ghana are lauding his initiative and want the focus to be broadened to include local farmers. MacDonald Bubuama is Programs Manager for Advocacy for Ghana Climate Adaptation Network.
Let's go back. Let's look at the good things in the Western science. But at the same time, let's look at the good things in our indigenous science and see how we can bring these together to address the issues of climate change. So if we are going to talk about climate change, then first, let's recognize what they are doing. Let's appreciate it and see how do we improve upon what they are doing.
Kome aspires to see many youth taking charge of the conversation to protect the environment. His organization has trained over 5,000 youth since they began operations 5 years ago. They hold their own annual conference where they discuss climate change issues with external experts. Through these conferences, they create the platform for their members to become goodwill ambassadors for the environment. But Kome says the successes haven't come easily.
It's been very, very challenging, you know, coming from the fact that climate change is not really an issue that is really promoted in this country from the media point of view especially. And secondly, because this is like a non-governmental organization, it's very difficult to raise funds to even mobilize people to take action.
Kome is hopeful they will continue to realize significant changes and ultimately contribute to the climate change debate and advocacy.
Isaac Kaleji in Accra. For more stories, visit our website dw.de/Africa. Before we leave you, a reminder of the main stories. The governing party of President Pierre Nkurunziza in Burundi has said it welcomed recommendations from leaders of the East African region to postpone the elections by a period of 6 weeks. South Africa has denied the $10 million it gave to a FIFA official was a bribe to host the 2010 World Cup. And we've also been hearing from a young Ghanaian who is influencing positive changes in his environment to help stop climate change. We welcome your comments on this program. Please send an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, a text message to +491609575951 or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Abubakar Jallo, Bye for now.